We are looking for a leader because the leader we have right now, in my opinion, as I mentioned in the first hour, and I mentioned the first time I was on the radio here on Monday night, is probably the worst president in my memory. I wasn't around when Millard Fillmore or some of those names were around, so I really can't say if he's the worst president in history, but I would say during my lifetime, my personal opinion is that George W. Bush is not the leader that we need right now, and we are looking for a leader. I'm Rick Sanborn, by the way, in for Crane Durham on 97.1 FM Talk, and I have a guest with me this evening, Judah Freed, who has written a book called Global Sense, and we are going to talk about the leadership of this country right now. As I mentioned before, at any time during the interview, if you'd like to talk to Judah, either agree or disagree with any of his points, please do, 969-9797 and 866-455-9797. And Judah has also graciously agreed to give a copy of his book, Global Sense, to callers who can tell us something that they've done today that they believe has made a difference on a global level. And what we found out the last hour when we actually gave away a copy to Drew was that just by him diffusing a situation where a woman was argumentative with some people who were trying to help out, and she, by Drew's interaction, turned more cordial and perhaps will then, as we've said, pay that forward, that would qualify as something, because eventually that kindness is going to be growing into something that would affect the globe. You know, it has to start small. Maybe, for instance, you know, like me, you're a recycling nut. You know, I mean, I took a couple of plastic bottles down to the recycling thing today, and that's got to affect on a global level. Wouldn't that qualify, Judah?
Definitely.
All right. All right. Now, let's get back to the book here. By the way, we will give a copy of the book if you've got some story like that that you'd like to share with us, no matter how small, because then we can kind of show, or Judah in particular, how that does multiply to have an effect on our global community, humanity in general.
And there's a good way to think about this. If you take any of the academic models of the communication process, where you have senders and receivers, and you go through encoding and decoding to encode a message that someone else can decode. If you look at that interactive process, you can't have a sender without a receiver. It takes both. Neither is more important or least important than the other. And I think that kind of interaction is also the same thing that goes on the individual level within our mind and our body and our hearts and our spirits. The same kind of interaction goes on between individuals, goes on within families, goes on within communities, goes on within our workplaces. And so if you just imagine a daisy chain of interactive, interconnected loops, that gives us an idea of how our individual actions on a daily basis can set up effects that reach out from our communities, out into our states, into our nations, and into our whole planet.
And that's right. That's what the global community is, as you say, benefits from whenever somebody just starts with something small.
Right, so, and that's where the global sensibility comes in.
And that's what we're looking for from you. So if you've done anything at all that you think might fit that category, Judah will be the judge. 76 Ways to Change the World Today, however, is part of his book. It's drawn from the Practical Idealism, Chapter 4 of the book, and you can find out more about that by logging on to globalsense.info or Judah Freed. Judah is J-U-D-A-H, judahfreed.com.
Right.
Before we continue here, since I did ask for phone calls, Lisa's on the line with me, so let's take that call. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, you guys.
Hi, Lisa.
I'm sitting here listening, and my first thing is I'm sitting here in Florissant with no power myself.
Lisa, I can barely hear you. Could you speak up a little bit?
I'm sitting here in Florissant with no power, sitting out in my backyard when normally I would be sleeping, dreaming happily, normally at this time. And I'm listening, and first of all, I normally listen in the morning, and it's very interesting listening to different callers in the evening. But the things that you were talking about earlier with just something that you can do to help something globally in a small way here, I went to my little local food stand, bought some stuff. There was an older lady buying some ice, and I helped her to the ice, bring her ice out to the car, and da-da-da-da-da. We started talking, and the story she told me was she had no power, she had no water, she had no way to contact people, and she was also getting ready to have major surgery on Thursday. And I feel like that was the situation. I went, oh, my gosh, here I am sitting here. I have no power, but you know what? I'm doing okay. And it really affected me in that she's dealing with so many more things than what I have to. And I'm grateful for that.
So in other words, you're grateful for putting into perspective your own problems by hearing somebody else's problems.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Earlier you were talking about people
and
being
angry. I think that's empathy and sympathy, isn't it?
Probably, yes. Yeah.
And Judah, do you think that would qualify as something that would eventually ripple to a global? I mean, because again, what you're talking about, Judah, is you know, your Palestinian and Israeli brethren laying down the arms. So mm-hmm. again, isn't that a form of understanding and empathy and sympathy towards how somebody else is feeling and what they're dealing with? I mean, if we juxtapose this to a global situation,
mm-hmm. okay, definitely. And I think I'd like to reply on two levels here. Referring back to that communication model I was talking about a moment ago, that when we encode a message in a form that we expect someone else to decode, the only way we're going to do that effectively is to be able to see through the other person's mind and eyes well enough to be able to get an appreciation of how they think so we can give our message in a way that they're likely to understand. Same thing when we're trying to give feedback to somebody based on something they've said, we need to understand them well enough to be able to encode our message in a way that they can decode. I mean, that's pure empathy.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think Lisa deserves a book.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Lisa, and you had one other comment, and let's get to that.
It was, when we were talking earlier, you said you were talking about George Bush and feeling like he's not the correct leader for our time right now. And I voted for Bush in this last election, and there are a lot of things right now I have a hard time agreeing with him with, but one thing I feel very strongly about is that I really do feel like he is trying to protect my country. And I feel
And how do you, I mean, what gives you that reasoning? I mean, what is it that George W. Bush has done that makes you feel safer?
I feel like he has put us out there, like he has said, we had to do something about 9/11, and he is putting things out there. He's doing something. He is making a stand, and he's in a world right now where we have a media and a whole different level of communication that really no other president has ever had to deal with. And I feel like that is part of his shortcomings. And he's really not great on the radio. He's really not great on the TV.
Yeah, he's not a great communicator. I agree with that.
Right.
But tell me,
well, he's gotten better at reading his speeches.
What has he done to, as you say, he had to do something about 9/11. What has he done about 9/11?
You know, where we are right now, I honestly don't know. I don't know what goes on in the background. I don't know who's talking to whom and what is really going on. Mm-hmm. But in my heart of hearts, I do feel like he's trying to protect me. I don't feel like he is a person who is going to deliberately try to hurt me or deliberately try to hurt my family or my neighbor.
Do you think that his actions in Iraq are helpful in the war on terror, or do you see the possibility they could actually be instigating more of the types of attacks that we want to avoid because of the actions we're taking in Iraq?
It really could possibly be, but I feel like right now where we stand, I feel like his heart and where he stands is really trying to protect me.
Okay.
I really do.
Lisa, can I ask you a question?
Get it. How can you say someone is going to just deliberately say, okay, go kill whoever and do whatever and go ahead and do it? You know why? Because I'm powerful and I have oil and I want more money. Do you really think that's what he's saying in his head?
Well, again, only the person who you're talking to knows what's going on in their head and what they're, But I'm saying that you have to judge a person by their actions. I think that's also what Judah is saying.
Yeah. Lisa, can I ask you a question? Do you believe that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the 9/11 attack?
Can I say directly no? You know why? I honestly have no proof. But in my heart of hearts, there's a whole lot that's going on behind the scenes that I don't know what's going on.
Right, but do you believe
that
he had any hand in that?
Me and mine.
Yeah, but again, as Judah says, is Saddam Hussein connected with 9/11? Just yes or no, in your heart of hearts.
I don't know. I want to say yes because he's a very evil, cruel man, and I want to see him.
Well, somebody can be an evil, terrible person,
right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that they committed the rape down the street. So I think it's really important that we do a lot of research and really do our homework. I would refer you to go to the web and look up the Downing Street memo. Actually, there's been a series of memos that have been leaked from Downing Street, which pretty effectively says that that George Bush fabricated a lot of the evidence linking Saddam Hussein to 9/11, basically for propaganda purposes. But don't take my word for it. Do your own homework.
Downing Street memo.
I don't doubt that at all, but is he the first president to use propaganda to encourage his people to view a certain thing? No, he's not. he's just living in a world right now where it's so media obsessed that he can't do what he has to do to protect his country. Mm-hmm. Where in the past, presidents didn't have to deal with people watching over their shoulder all the time.
Well, then the news media hasn't done a good job, because that's what the news media is supposed to do, is watch over what's happening politically.
Well, the mainstream news media is not really doing this job.
I agree with that, too.
As a journalist, by the way.
Lisa, we're
going
to give you a book, and you know, and perhaps that book also will shed some light that you are looking for, obviously, because as you said, you know, you don't know one way or the other. You can only believe what's in your heart of hearts, and you'll only be able to believe the kind of information that you can garner either from Global Sense, Judah Fried's book, or the Downing Street Memo. And if you Google Downing Street Memo, that might give you some insight, too. But if you hold on, we'll give you a book.
Thank you.
All right, hold on.
Thanks for calling.
All right. And Judah, I got Toby and Lisa, and we want to take a couple
more calls.
I'm glad
we're stimulating some stuff.
Sure.
Do you want to go ahead and read that section that you wanted to read?
Yeah, before we take a break, and I will have to take a break, but this kind of sets things up, and then you can answer this. This is chapter 5 of the book, and what Judah has done is he's done a quotation from someone who obviously we would recognize in history, because after all, this is based on Thomas Paine's book called Common Sense, and this is an update called Global Sense. So a lot of the quotations come from people of Thomas Paine's age, and in this particular one, Clear and Present Dangers, Chapter 5, it says, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." That was said by Benjamin Franklin. Certainly nobody would argue a great patriot of this country. The real dangers that are facing our world right now, you say, are three very evident situations. So let's do those three, and then I'll take a break, and then we'll come back and do more calls and talk
about
this.
Sounds good.
All right. So those three are.
Well, reading from the chapter just shortly below that quote, I'll just read myself. So, at this point in Common Sense, where Thomas Paine discussed the clear and present dangers facing American colonists, let us discuss the real dangers now facing America and our whole world. Any thinking person may concede three self-evident facts. One, the United States and European Union have foes around the world who will spit hate at us, who will spit hate at the West with their dying breaths. Two, since the Al-Qaeda attacks on September 11, 2001, we witness a loss of our civil liberties in the name of fighting terrorism. Three, the global war on terrorism has spawned many more terrorists, and each assault on these terrorists only swells their ranks. Thus, we have given up our natural rights and liberties to purchase a little temporary safety, and our supposed safety is an illusion. Paine wrote that protecting the people is the primary duty of government, but can government protection go too far?
These are the kind of questions raised in the book called Global Sense, and Judah Fried also offers answers. We'll hear some of those answers. We'll continue our discussion, and we invite you to join us, too, at 969-9797, 1-866-455-9797. In for Crane Durham, I'm Rick Sanborn on 97.1 FM Talk.
More truth next.